I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We are celebrating 22 years in business and just entering our ninth year of doing this program. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our new 2016 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab that includes session one and session two of this program. Plus, our new book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icons on our homepage. Our topic today, it's part of a special series, and it's part three of where to go fishing for candidates and what to do when all else fails. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of issues, including interpersonal coaching, team building, stress management workshops, and much more. In fact, we just opened an office in Taiwan, so if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas for how to interact with a U.S. company, please let us know. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to the calls we get from clients and association members, and that's how we come up with other topics. And we want to address topics that are both domestically needed and globally to address the many business issues that organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible, so please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. So write down a couple questions during our program, send them in, or hold them until the end of the program. Our special guest with us today is a very close friend of mine, business colleague, and he's just a generally cool guy and knows what he's doing. His name is Barry Deutsch. Many of you know Barry. He's a well-known thought leader in hiring and peak performance management. He's a frequent and sought-after speaker for management meetings, trade association CEO forums such as Vistage International, which is a worldwide CEO membership organization and has over 20,000 CEOs and senior executives. Many of Barry's clients view him as their virtual chief talent officer. Barry is also frequently asked to present his Impact Hiring Solutions award-winning program on hiring, retention, and motivating top talent, and leverages a vast knowledge based of over 30 years in the executive search field, with a track record of successful placements in multi-billion dollar Fortune 100 companies, entrepreneurial firms, mid-cap organizations, and everything in between. He has worked closely with thousands of CEOs and key executives to help improve hiring success, leveraging human capital, and raises the bar on talent acquisition. Barry earned his BA and MA from American University in Washington, D.C. Prior to his executive search career, Barry held positions in finance and general management in Mattel, Beatrice Foods, and Westinghouse Cable. Barry is also the author of the book, You're Not the Person I Hired. I call this book the Bible of Hiring. If you do not have a copy of it, go to Barry's site, which is on the you'll see it on the screen, or you can go into Amazon and purchase a copy that way. But it's a must for your hiring managers. I feel privileged to have Barry with us today and to share ideas that will help us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. We're not going to have slides today. This is literally going to be a conversation. And registration for our next program will begin at the end of this session. So, Barry, welcome back to Open Line for part three.
Thank you, Dana. Appreciate that. Dana, I have a question for you before we get started.
Yes.
Of the folks that are on our call today, has everybody been on the previous two calls, or do we have a mix?
We have a mix.
Okay, so let me start for just a few minutes in what I'll call a kind of a quick review of what we talked about in the first two sessions, and then we'll jump into, as Dana said, what happens when all else fails. So as many of you know, I believe that we're in one of the toughest job markets I've seen in 30 years. Most economic forecasters are now saying that our next dip, downturn, resetting of the employment market probably will not occur until sometime in the back half of 2019. There's that whole thing about, you know, McKinsey and their war for talent that was back in the dot-com area, that's simplistic compared to how tough it is today. We're in a brutally tough job market that is only going to keep getting worse. And using the same traditional methods that worked when we were at the bottom of the recession 2 or 3 years ago just don't work today. In fact, they're almost dysfunctional. The traditional process of trying to find people, of where we take a generic job description and we post it on a generic job board, Monster, Career Builder, Indeed, even specialty job boards, is random, hopeless. I call it post and pray, where we throw it out there and then we pray that by some miracle, the right candidate will drop out of the rafters into our lap. Great strategy in an economic job market where there's very few jobs, lots of folks looking for work, long-term unemployed, people desperate and needing a job. That's not what today's market is. There are way more many jobs than there are folks, and it's very tough to extract folks from their current companies. That traditional process is a complete fail. And so we want to use other methods and strategies. In our last couple of calls, we cycled through four key strategies, and I'd like to review those fairly quickly with one overlaying piece on top of all of them. And then we'll talk about some of the more unusual, creative, thought-provoking kinds of things you might do when everything, as Dana said, the title of today's program, when everything else fails. Number one, the overriding piece, is we have to be able to describe work in more compelling terms. Publishing the job description is not compelling. That is an internal, compliant, regulatory, back office, administrative document that is a disgusting, revolting, repulsive approach to trying to attract folks. The very best candidates couldn't give a darn what you want as an employer. They just don't care. They want to know what's in it for me. What am I going to learn? What will I become in this role? What kind of impact will I have? And we talked about in our first session how to write a compelling marketing statement. Go to our website and download our book. There's an entire chapter in our book. It is by far the most popular chapter. It's titled How to Attract the Bottom Third of the Candidate Pool. That's actually funny. Everybody should have laughed. Oh, refute it. That's why I didn't hear laughs. It's written a little bit tongue-in-cheek, and there's a humorous element to the book, but it walks through in excruciating detail how to build a more compelling statement of work. There are examples on our website. Brad, my partner of 30 years, and I have published a ton of stuff on how to do this. So I won't belabor that. We spent about 15, 20 minutes on how to specifically write a compelling marketing statement to attract great people in our first session with each other. Now, once you've written that, now the question becomes, what the heck do I do with it? And there are really four key strategies. Strategy number one, referrals. Your minimum goal on referrals, folks that come to you being referred by your employees, your vendors, your subcontractors, your customers, your clients, should be 50%. Of all the people you hire on an ongoing basis from today, your goal should be 50%. And many of my clients who I've worked with over the years in looking at their referral programs have actually boosted this into the 75 or 80% range. They are literally, they've turned their businesses into recruiting machines where everybody is involved in the process, not just someone in HR or staffing. There is, the good thing about referral generation is that there's an incredible body of literature that's been written about driving referrals. And it's not about the incentive you offer. That's really secondary. Offering incentives do not change people's behavior. You still have to offer a reward, a financial reward, when people make a referral and folks take the job and stay for a period of time. But as an incentive, it's useless. The way to drive that is through culture, communication, programs, those kinds of steps. And as I said, there's an unbelievable body of literature out there about how to create great referral programs. I urge you to track this as a metric, starting today. Of all the sources where you get candidates from, what percentage came from referrals? How many of those folks got hired? How many of those folks, after they were hired, lived up to your expectations? And seeing if you don't get dramatically better results in your recruiting efforts through driving those referrals. There's a ton of stuff that companies are experimenting with, like JobFight and some others, in terms of using folks that are your employees, their LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter connections, to help drive some of those referrals. And you might want to take a look at some of those automated online tools. A lot of my clients are having a lot of success with those. Okay, so we talked about referrals. Number two, online advertising. As you can tell, I'm not really big about online advertising. I think it's not a particularly effective tool, but I still think you should do it as an arrow in your quiver, except you shouldn't spend 90% of your time hoping you're going to get a good candidate for that. It should be a very minor piece. Luck and hope do sometimes play a role. But here's the key. Instead of posting the traditional job description, you should post your compelling marketing statement. Leave it up for 2 weeks. I know the job boards let you leave the ad up for, 4 weeks or 2 months. 2 weeks, everybody's seen it that's going to see it. It's now stale and useless. Take the thing, rip it down, completely rewrite it. Your first assumption should not be, oh, we're not going to pull anybody through this channel, it's not working. Your first assumption should be that whatever you wrote and published wasn't compelling enough. And I'd like to urge you to try at least one rewrite.
Hey, Barry?
Yes.
A question just came in. Can you elaborate on what the tools your clients have had success with that leverages their existing teams' networks?
I would urge you to probably do a Google search. This is changing almost on a daily basis. My guess is there's probably 3 or 4 top vendors that have systems and processes. As I said, JobVite is one. I just got an email on another one yesterday. I can't even remember what that one was that I took a look at. But you can easily find these and experiment and try them out. Some are a little more expensive. Some are ERP platforms. Some tie into your existing ERP platforms. It's all over the map.
Thank you.
Good question, but I'd urge you to do a Google search and some research. And I'm sure that some of the major HR sites like SHRM and Pyra have actually done some research and have some recommendation thoughts behind these. Now you made me lose my train of thought.
Thank you.
Oh, we were talking about advertising. So completely rewrite the thing, repost it, see if you can pull any candidates. This should be a very minor approach in your overall job strategy. Most of my clients today are having very little response and success by running ads. Hopefully the compelling marketing statement gives you a little bit of turbo boost to that, but I wouldn't put a lot of stock in it. Again, referrals should be your dominant way or method of bringing folks to the table. I mean, if I look back on my own executive search career, if I think about 30 years of doing search over 1,000 projects, I'd probably say in 995 of those, the person who got the job was not the first person who reached out or was connected with. It was a second to third to fourth level referral. And that's why it's such a powerful method. And every HR hiring recruiting study I've ever looked at, every one of them unanimously, 30 years of looking at this, all say that referrals is your most viable mechanism to bring great people to the table. I'll hold that until we get to other strategies. The next step is what we'll call one degree of separation, or birds of a feather flock together. People who are really good in their unique profession, niche, capability, whether they're field techs, they're inventory control analysts, they're sales reps, they know other good people. And our goal is to leverage those connections. Those folks are active in networking groups. They're active in their industry groups. They hang out. They got similar degrees, similar alumni associations. They get their continuing education from the same place. They read the same publications. They're all connected in different ways. And we want to find those connectors, influencers, reach out, and through one degree of separation, have them lead us to the right person. Let me give a couple of examples that might illustrate this. And I know I may have shared one of these in our last call, but let me refocus on these. And they're dramatically different examples. I literally have hundreds of these that clients have shared with me through the years. I'm going to share with you a couple of them. And as I go through them, I'd like you to think about what's the underlying theme or foundation in both of these examples. So example number one, I have a client, security guard company, Phoenix, Arizona. They hire lots of minimum wage armed security guards to be night watchmen guarding commercial construction that's going up. I know, that's a little bit oxymoronic. Minimum wage, armed. In the height of the real estate boom, commercial real estate boom, Phoenix and Scottsdale, Arizona have one of the highest rates of commercial construction this country's ever seen. You couldn't find an armed security guard to guard your new building going up if your life depended on it. My client had tried advertising. They had tried referrals. They weren't having a lot of success. So they thought, okay, let's try Barry's idea, one degree of separation. Where do these folks connect, engage, communicate, share, hang out, participate with each other? So let's pretend for a moment you're my security guard client. Where would be one of the first places you might post your compelling statement of work? Not your job description, your compelling statement of work. What's the common thing that all these people are united by? Guns. So what did my client do? They posted it at the local shooting ranges. Then we started thinking backwards. Well, if you end up at the shooting range, where'd you go to get your guns and ammo? Oh, let's post it up in all the local gun stores. I know this gets scary after a little bit. Then you might be thinking, all right, well, if you have this affinity for guns and ammo, what are the kind of groups you like to connect with and engage with? Oh. So my client went online and got all the local email addresses of all the chapter leaders of the NRA organizations, the shooting clubs, the hunting clubs, all the local mercenary and militia groups. No, I'm just kidding. They didn't do that. They didn't go after the mercenary and militia groups. They probably thought of it, but they didn't do that. What kind of prior life experiences, work experiences might these folks have had? Oh, they all came out of military or paramilitary type organizations. So my client went to the local military bases, posted their compelling marketing statement in the outplacement offices for folks coming off of active and reserve duty. They went to the local union hall for the police, you know, the fraternal order police hall, and posted it up there, the fire station. Then they went to the local gun and knife show that was held annually in Phoenix, Arizona, Scottsdale, and set up a booth at the very front. And for every person that walked by, they handed out a copy of their compelling marketing statement. Over a 10-year period of time, they didn't do 1 ounce of recruiting. They didn't publish ads. They didn't even have to do referrals. They had an enormous long line of people who wanted to come and work for them because they tapped into that one degree of separation idea. Let me give you a different example. I have a client. They're one of the country's largest syndicators of Christian music broadcasting and conservative talk radio programming. They have these little itty-bitty radio stations in small towns all over the country. One of the hardest jobs for them to recruit for was what was called a radio ad sales rep. This person would go to, you know, Main Street USA, knocking on doors, would you like to buy a radio ad this month? Nobody wanted this job. They all felt it was too restrictive of a programming format and too small of a market. I said to my client, this goes back a dozen years, I said to my client, how do you do this now? Well, we take whatever the local Sunday paper is, and we post a display ad in their Sunday paper about our sales rep positions. Wasn't working at all. So I said, well, let's be very old school about this. Where might most of these kinds of folks that you'd like to hire that might fit your culture, your values, your interests, where might they congregate in these local communities? The obvious answer is at church. So in any of these small towns, you might have 5 to 6 local church you know, religious affiliated organizations. I said, why don't you take your radio general manager for each of these towns when you have an opening? They go out to each church, they take a thumbtack, they take the compelling marketing statement, and they stick it up on the physical bulletin board that's in the hallway, typically of most of these organizations and buildings. They started doing that, and they got an unbelievable response. Not once in those 12 years did they ever find a radio ad sales rep. What they did is they found a lot of great sales reps. They put a good training program in place, and every person they hired was perfectly aligned and meshed with their company values and culture. What's the underlying theme from these two stories? And as I said, I have hundreds of these stories where my clients have thought about one degree of separation of reaching into groups and touching people, and then using them as leverage to get to other folks. What's the underlying theme? We call it fish where the fish are. You wouldn't cast your line in the part of the lake where there's no fish. You'd go to where all the fish are hanging out. Now, I find over 30 years, I get inspiration in lots of different places. This one actually came to me, gosh, you know, 25 plus years ago. And it's in the early days of the internet. I don't know if anybody remembers that far back. You got to have a little gray or missing hair to remember what the early days were. But I'm on a service called CompuServe. Now I know I'm really dating myself, right? Okay, so I'm on CompuServe. I'm an old line forum and blog junkie. I love forums and blogs. I belong to so many of these, it takes me an hour to get through all my messages on a daily basis. But back then, I'm hanging out in a forum, a photography forum. It's a hobby of mine. A woman posts a statement, and I think, wow, first blush, that's the stupidest thing I've ever read. And then almost instantly I realized, oh, that's brilliant. That person just nailed what real recruiting is. What she said was, if you really want to go after the very best, you get the best pictures. You can't sit at home and watch animals on TV for photography. You can't go to the zoo and try to take pictures of them in captivity. You got to go on safari, go to Africa, get right up close in their natural habitats, and get perfect pictures. I'm like, bingo, that describes real recruiting. The very best are not going to come to you. They're not going to answer your ads. That's a very small microcosm of the Canada pool. They're not going to jump in your lap. They're not going to be enthralled with your website. You have to go to them. You have to fish where they are. And you have to find folks who are going to be your natural influencers and connectors to bring other people to you. That's how you get the very best. That's the other 50% of the equation. Remember, 50% are through referrals of people you're already connected to and know. The other 50% are this fish where the fish are concept. And you got to perfect this and it's going to be different for every kind of role you're recruiting for. And you want to think about it in advance. Now, what's the online piece to that? And I'm going to get into that in a few minutes. It's using LinkedIn to reach out to folks because LinkedIn now automates that process. You want to do it both offline and online. You send a nice, pleasant, warm message to folks on LinkedIn, and you can be extremely narrow in who you want to talk to, very targeted. 50% of the folks you send the message to are going to respond and be open to talking with you. 50%. That's how many people feel they're dissatisfied with their current job, their role, their impact, what they're becoming, and what they'd like to do. 50%. You don't have to work real hard to get 50%. But sitting back and passively waiting for people to respond to ads is not going to work in this economy, nor will it work for the next 3 or 4 years. So these are some of the different things that we might consider trying.
Barry, a question just came in. Do you train companies on how to use LinkedIn?
Yes.
Okay.
Specifically for recruiting.
Okay. So just reach out to Barry if you want to have some more specifics on that, and you guys can work a program up.
It's interesting you mentioned that. The hour call I had right before this was taking about 25 sales managers from a client of mine from around the country and walking them through how they personally can use this to hire sales professionals in their specific territories and regions. Okay, now we come to the hard part. What happens if you try these four techniques and none of it works? You're not getting any results. So let's talk through some of those strategies. Number one, you can start to get creative. You know, how do you get your opportunity in front of folks that you want to attract? Let me throw out some different ideas. I have a client that's a fairly good-sized logistics firm. They do freight transportation. And one of the hardest things that they, in this economy, are trying to find are truck drivers to drive their rigs. So one of my recommendations to them was, why don't you go set up one of your trucks, a panel van, or one of your larger trucks, in a truck stop along the route, plaster the side of it with great visuals about how, you know, that you're hiring, you're looking for folks, and then offer a $25 Starbucks or a $10 Starbucks reward card if somebody refers someone. And they got an extraordinary response by doing that. One of my clients is a technology firm that hires programmers, developers, technical staff. They went and set up a rolling van, you know, a van with a great message on the side of it in the parking lot right across from their direct competitor, who was a very large, like a Google, Intel level company, and they got a great response from that. You can reverse engineer the process. If you're trying to hire someone in purchasing, who are all the people that might know that purchasing or buying agent? It'll be sales reps in the industry that are calling on them. So if you have connections to the sales reps, they know who all the purchasing agents are and might refer those people to you. You're trying to hire someone in sales. Who are the people that they're calling on? So all the buyers, purchasing agents, design engineering managers are going to know every one of those buying or purchasing agents. I just did a project for a chief financial officer. I have a fairly extensive network of bankers. Instead of cold calling CFOs, I reached out to all my banking contacts in this specific area, called them and said, who are the CFOs, controllers that you know that might be open to hearing about this opportunity? Not only did I get a great list of people, but they were all warm versus cold referrals. So I call that reverse engineering the search. Who knows this person, either on the buying side or the selling side of services or products? The other element to this is online recruiting. And I want to touch on this for a few minutes. And then, Dana, I think what we'll do is we'll just, since we've been through now 2.5 sessions of this, we'll just kind of throw this open to questions and comments, if that's okay with you.
Okay, perfect.
So let me take maybe 5 or 10 minutes and cycle through how to sort of a deeper dive around leveraging LinkedIn from a recruiting perspective. And then I want to touch on using recruiters, because many of my clients are, it sounds like I'm cutting my own throat here, very frustrated with using recruiters. So I'd like to touch on some of the mistakes and errors that companies make in using recruiters. And then, as I said, we'll throw it open to everybody for questions and such. All right, LinkedIn recruiting. Couple of things you got to do. Number one, the first thing people are going to do when you reach out to them online is they're going to check you out. And you got to have a pretty compelling message, presence, visual presentation of who you are and why people might want to connect and engage. Number one, your personal LinkedIn profile needs to be very compelling. If it's a dud, there's not very much information, it's not visual, it's not using a lot of the new tools that LinkedIn has made available, folks are going to get the message from you, look you up, and go, that's not someone I want to be connected with. So I get an extraordinary number of people that find me, seek me out, and almost everybody that I send a message to wants to connect and engage with me. And it's because I've done a lot of work around creating a compelling profile that when people look at it, they say, that's an individual I'd like to be connected to. So that's step one. Step two, you better have a pretty convincing and attractive presence on LinkedIn, because that's the second thing they're going to do. They're going to go look up your LinkedIn company page. Is that compelling? Does it list your jobs? Does it have content about your company? Are you publishing new and frequent information? Folks want to see that. Number three, your website, your employment page or career page needs to be compelling and interesting. Just listing the jobs you have open is about as boring as it gets. You need to have snippets, vignettes, video, audio, written statements of why people love working in your company. Sort of taking with the stuff that Glassdoor is collecting on companies on Facebook, like the Yelp version of, you know, this is the company I worked with, this is why I like working there. You want to actually have those kinds of comments, both visual, audio, text, on your website with pictures of your employees, great things they've done, the you know, public involvement they're involved in your local communities. Potential candidates eat that stuff up. They don't care about your company brochure and what the products and services you have. They want to know, why do people like working in your company? Why are they there? How long have they been there? What opportunities have they had?
Barry,
yes.
Two questions just came in. One is there a company you could recommend for doing the video so it's done?
No, in fact, I don't recommend you use a company. I recommend you keep this at a very simple level. Take a handheld camcorder, do it through an iPhone video. You don't want it to be more than about a minute to a minute and a half. It doesn't have to be a professional production. In fact, it looks more real when it's not a professional production.
Okay.
And, you know, and all you got to do is ask an employee a couple of questions. You've been here for 13 years. Why do you like working in our company? And record what they say and then take that and stick it on your website. You'd be amazed at the response you get from doing that kind of work. Or record it as an audio message on your iPhone. Write it down in terms of three or four sentences as a testimonial. Put those up on your website. That's what candidates are hungry for. They want to see why people like being part of your business and organization.
Those are great examples. And second question is, what companies have good examples of a LinkedIn page?
Wow. I'd have to think about that. That, you know, I thought about putting like a one-pager together as part of my formal presentation on how to use, you know, doing some of these more creative recruiting strategies. I actually teach a three-hour program on this versus this like 45-minute call. I don't have that as a ready list. I might think about doing a little benchmarking and putting a list like that together. I'm getting the sense that people want to see those examples and illustrations.
So the person that asked that question, why don't you email Barry? You guys can talk offline about that. Barry's email is on the page now, on the screen.
Okay, so now you've done this piece. So my partner and I have a formal program that we call it, you know, advanced recruiting in 15 minutes a week. So 15 minutes a week, you're going to want to go online. You're going to want to create different searches in LinkedIn based on the keywords, geography, specifics, backgrounds, narrow in on that search. And then you're going to send messages out to those folks asking if they'd be open to networking with you. And you'll find that when you send nice, warm, friendly messages like, "Hi, Karen, I came across your background on LinkedIn. I was impressed by some of the things you've done. We're trying to hire a account manager for our operation in Philadelphia. Would you be open to spending a few moments with me on the phone networking about this opportunity?" And 50% of the people, at a minimum, that you send that message to will respond to you and be open to having a conversation. And you do this 15 minutes a day, pop out 15 to 20 messages. By the end of a month, you've sent out 100 messages. You'll be overwhelmed with the number of candidates that would like to talk to you. And it's not just the kind of generic folks that apply to ads. Because on LinkedIn, you're being extremely selective about the people you're sending the message to. And then you keep doing that over and over. Now, I'll give you a little shortcut to this. I do not recommend doing this through your own personal profile. I recommend you buy a little tool that LinkedIn has called Recruiter Lite. It attaches to your profile. It costs about $120 a month on a month-to-month basis, and it is one of the greatest recruiting tools I've ever come across in terms of the resources, the capability, the tracking tools, and I'm probably not using more than 20% of its capability, and it's still more powerful than almost anything I've touched. I can see who I've called, who I've reached out to, when I reached out to them. I can see every message I've sent. It allows me to track through my searches, say multiple searches. It gives me the email, in-mail messages to send to people. It's a phenomenal tool. You might want to go and check it out. Even try it out for $120 a month, and then you can cancel it after the first month. It's a no-brainer to try to use it and test it. And if you got any questions about using it, you're welcome to email me direct or call me, and I'll kind of walk you through or step you through how to use it. And then, you know, that old trite phrase, rinse and repeat. Keep doing it over and over until you've built up hundreds of potential candidates. And if you're recruiting in a specific area, in a niche, in a unique geographic area, you'd be amazed at how easy this is to work. So I have a client, for example, that sells flooring to apartment houses or multifamily housing in specific territories. So if I'm in Philadelphia, who are all the people that are selling construction-related services, painting, flooring, wall coverings, furniture to multifamily unit housing? That list can't be more than 200 people in Philadelphia. Once I know who all those people are, now I just need to start working that list and building a relationship and figuring out who the very best are. That's the step of nirvana in recruiting, is what I call just-in-time recruiting, so that when you have an opening, you don't have to blindly go out and try to figure out who's looking for a job right now. You already know who the very best are, who the cream of the group is versus the cream of the crap that normally occurs through, you know, posting job descriptions on job boards. Okay, last piece, and then we'll throw it open to some questions you might have. Recruiters, using recruiters. I'd like to take you through some of the research that Brad and I have done over 30 years in what I call the top 10 mistakes the companies make in selecting recruiters. Number one, an assumption that you're paying a 15, 20, 25% fee and that all recruiters have a very rigorous process to conduct a search assignment. The reality is 90% of recruiters have no process. It's a wing and a prayer. The vast majority are running ads or taking old, tired retreads and recirculating them to you. They don't have an approach to doing a search. Falling victim to this mistake results in searches that don't get filled in a timely manner, don't get filled with top caliber candidates, or sometimes don't get filled at all. Industry statistics in the search business show that 65% of all searches are not completed by the search firm you select. 65%. They fail miserably. And it's because they don't have a rigorous, structured, step-by-step process of what happens if we do X and that fails? What's contingency plan B? Well, what if that fails? What's contingency plan C? They just wing it and hope for the very best, and when you don't accept their first few candidates, they stop working your assignment. So one of the first steps is, do they have a rigorous process, step-by-step, of what they're going to do to find the very best candidates? Number two, there's an assumption that all recruiters will help you effectively define the job, or they just accept whatever that job description is that you give them, and in the industry that's called a job order form. And usually that has nothing to do with what your hiring managers are validating, verifying, and vetting whether the candidate can do the job. Most recruiters do not know how to define work. They don't know how to help you in the process, and they have no process to go about that. They just take whatever you give them and then start checking boxes. Number three, there's an assumption that all recruiters fish, this is the piece that we were talking about earlier, they fish for what we'll call selective and sleeper candidates in the deep end of the pool, the ones that have good jobs, are happy where they're at, are making a fair wage, they'd like a better opportunity, but they're not flinging their resume all over the place and they're not part of the active candidate pool. Most recruiters only dip their toe into the active candidate market, and I got to tell you, instead of paying 15, 20, 25% fees, there's no reason on earth you can't bring those same exact candidates to the table that most recruiters are bringing to you. So do they know how to go after those folks and recruit those people? Number four, there's an assumption or a mistake that gets made that all recruiters do an equally good job in assessing candidates. That's why they're a recruiter. That's why they deserve that 25%. The reality is that very few recruiters have any clue how to measure, assess, validate, verify, and vet someone's competency capability. They're flinging resumes at you. Hopefully, you're going to bite on them. And granted, there are exceptions to the rule, like moi. There's others out there. But the reality is most recruiters do meet and greets, if they even meet the candidate. And then they check a few boxes and fling the candidate at you, hoping you'll fall in love, and you'll hire the person and pay them a fee. And because most statistics show that 90% of the reason candidates get hired has nothing to do with their competency, capability, or performance. It's based on rapport, chemistry, and likability. It's not even based on their real personality. It's based on acting skills. Most recruiters are very successful in placing folks who make a great presentation, not whether they can actually do the job. And so one of the things that you can ask recruiters to do is type the exact responses of why they feel the person's competent in those areas, what their accomplishments are, their achievements, and their application of the skill sets that you're looking for. Force recruiters to carry the heavy load on their back, because if they're earning the fee, they should be able to validate, verify, and vet what you want, instead of flinging it at you like a broker and a food product and hoping you'll bite. Make them do the heavy lifting. Okay, that's number four. Number five, there's an assumption that to be effective, a recruiter has to be a functional industry or geographic expert, and nothing could be further from the truth. Great recruiting has nothing to do with where the recruiter lives, the background of the recruiter, or what industry niche the recruiter operates in. 30 years ago, when the IBM PC hadn't been invented, you had to be a functional expert. You had to have an index card system of thousands of financial executives, engineers, sales reps, because that was the only way to track people. Today, it's all irrelevant. What's really important is the person a good recruiter? Do they understand how to get inside someone's head and convince them to leave a great job to come to your even better job? Recruiting is not about just flinging opportunities at people and trying to convince, hopefully they'll leave their company. It's real recruiting. And most recruiters don't know how to do that. Assumption number six, remember there's 10 of these, is that the value a recruiter brings is showing you a candidate. That's not the value. I tell my clients that one-third of what you pay for in a recruiting fee is getting candidates shown to you. Yes, it's an important part, but it's a straightforward discipline of bringing candidates forward. The real value a recruiter brings is helping you to define the work, measure the candidate, be involved with you in the interview process, and helping you assess, validate, verify, and vet this is a great hire and having skin in the game in terms of that success. It's not just showing you candidates. That's brokerage. That's worth maybe 5% of the fee. Number seven, the assumption that all recruiters are, quote, protecting your best interests, that they're out to help you. Most recruiters are out to maximize their own fee, and they will say whatever they need to say to you to convince you to hire a candidate. So what's the downside of this? This is the advice I give to every client. You, regardless of where the source of the candidate comes from, you have to put everybody through the same exact process. The questions you ask, the tests you give, and how you measure folks. Just because they came from a recruiter doesn't mean they're a better person. Just because you got that referral from that high school friend doesn't mean they're a better person. Whether they're an internal candidate, it was a referral, they came off an ad, they walked in off the street, everybody should be put through these same exact oranges to oranges, apples to apples kinds of assessment. Number eight, the assumption that all recruiters do an adequate job of communicating with the client. This could be probably one of the greatest complaints that I hear from companies, is that once you've thrown money into that little black hole, most recruiters stop communicating with you. What are they doing? Are they calling people? What's the list of folks they've called? Where do they stand in the process? Who else are they going to call? One way to manage this is to set a regular weekly conference call for a status update with the recruiter on who they've specifically spoken to, what the status of those calls are, who's on their call list for the next week, issues, comments, thoughts, and force them to stay on target by holding weekly update calls. Number nine, we're almost done. sorry, I said there were 10. It's actually 8 key mistakes, not 10. 8 key mistakes. Now, what are the action steps that you can take so that you don't fall victim to this failure rate that typically occurs? Action step number 1, validate the recruiter as a proven process for hiring. What questions do they ask? How do they interview candidates? What's their steps of working through finding the candidate? What specifically do they do? Make sure that you have given the recruiter a set of expectations, outcomes, results, deliverables you expect from the candidate. Don't give them the job description. Give them the things the hiring manager is going to use to validate performance by. Okay, most recruiters are looking for something that has nothing to do with what the hiring manager is actually measuring or assessing. Make the recruiter describe and present in precise detail their sourcing plan, the contingencies and alternatives if that initial plan isn't effective, what they're going to do, how they're going to go about it, and what's the pitch, what we call the compelling marketing statement, of why someone would want to raise their hand and come forward. Make sure, and there's a little bit of overlap with number 1, make sure they've got a very rigorous process and thorough interviewing process to validate, vet, and verify whether the candidate can do the job. What are the interview questions? How do they document it? Getting examples, illustrations, and specifics from them. And then finally, make sure they have a structured approach to communicating with you during the course of the search process, including detailed weekly updates and status reporting. If you do those things, think about those 8 key mistakes and then these 5 key steps to overcome those, I guarantee it, your success with recruiters will go up dramatically. Well, Dana, that brings us to the close of our content on, you know, what to do if all else fails in the process. And I just want to say, as a very last resort, you should consider using recruiters. Many of my clients jump to using recruiters long before it's actually necessary. And I think using a recruiter, particularly because of the expense and time involvement, should be your absolute desperate last thing you do in terms of trying to find a candidate. If you do the steps and things that we've talked about and covered through these 3 sessions, you should be able to find and attract and assess great people and dramatically lower the cost of actually recruiting and bringing people to your organization. Dana, I'll turn it back over to you.
That's great. And Barry, you also have, I know you created a couple of years ago a step before having to go to a recruiter. It was up to a 10-hour program of things to do. So it's very specific. Is that correct?
Yes. We actually think that there's a lot of companies out there that don't need to spend, you know, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 to find a candidate, that there's some simple things that you could do on your own, and we've got a little $2,500 10-hour project where we take you in hand-holding fashion step by step through every one of these so you can bring great people to the table. And that tends to be a very effective alternative much of the time when you don't have to pay a recruiting fee to bring someone forward.
We've had a couple clients that have used that program that you have, and they only use a couple hours. They had their answer, and they were able to apply it to all their across the board for many recruitment projects they had. Couple of questions that came in before we open the lineup. So one is, and these are a couple of them around using a recruiter. What is a recommended guarantee time with the recruiter?
Depends on the level of the search. So if it's a contingent search where you're only paying the fee if you hire someone, 90 days is a typical industry standard. If you're doing retained level search, where you're giving the person money up front, then 6 months to a year is a typical standard.
Somebody's asking 3 things that companies should look out for before they sign the agreement with a recruiter.
Again, I would reiterate that one of the most important things is understanding in very precise detail what's the process they use for finding candidates. Step number 2, a very detailed explanation of how do they vet, verify, and validate this is someone to show you on the search. And then number 3, what's their process for communication? How often is it going to occur? Do you have to chase them to get updates and status? How are they going to describe it? Is it going to be a weekly report, a monthly meeting? What are the steps? How do they do it? And then finally, the last piece is calling references of the recruiter to validate they actually do those things.
Another question is hidden fees to look for within a retained search agreement.
My personal perspective is that there's lots of companies that recruiters will ding them for all sorts of fees, you know, billing you back for phone, like a lawyer, you know, 15 minutes here on the phone, this. I think all recruiting fees should be flat fees, not tied to a percentage of compensation, and there should be no hidden charges, so that any step of the process in a search agreement, you know exactly what you're going to pay, regardless of the candidate, how long it takes, what the steps are, or how much effort the search firm puts into it.
Thank you. And two more, and then we'll open the line. Individuals asking where they can find examples of successful recruitments within the targeted, quote, natural habitat, such as you use with the logistics, the roadside example, the security guard, gun shop, radio church, et cetera.
This is just being creative. I mean, when I take on a new assignment in a new industry, one of the first things I do is research. I go on and I start Googling that name of that job, that industry, who are the key competitors, what are the industry publications, what schools do people get these degrees in, what are the associations. I go on and I start looking at LinkedIn profiles of potential candidates for common words and phrases, industry conferences, what are the groups that they all belong to. And before you know it, you do a few minutes of this and a pattern emerges of what the very best belong to, connect with, engage, communicate.
And that could be part of the brain. That process can be part of the brainstorming discussion within the 10-hour program. Is that correct?
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
Okay. A couple of people have written in about the other sessions. If you miss those sessions, or you want to share them with other members of your team, or if you have an association and you want to send these programs out, go to our website under the event tab, and you'll find all three programs. This third one will be posted in the next couple of days, and you'll all be sent a copy of the recording. But again, if you want in the future, you can just go to the event tab on our site, and they're posted there along with many other open line programs after the 9-plus years of doing these programs. One more thing before we open up the line, if you would like to sign up for our next program, Global Strategic Planning, you can sign up now, and we'll be sending out invites to that also. We have been asked over the years by those attending to not record when we open the lineup, because people don't want their voices recorded, apparently. So we always like to respect that. So we're going to close this part of the program down, and then we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with Barry. I would ask everyone to please put your phone on mute and then unmute it if you have a question for Barry. So I want, before we close this down, I just want to thank Barry for being a part of this program. This is an amazing series, and for Barry taking the time to do this. If you have additional questions for Barry, you can call him on his phone number, which is on the screen, area code 310-502-5313. That's 310-502-5313. Or you can email Barry at barry@impacthiringsolutions.com. And Barry, one more time, can you mention about what you have on your website that people can go and download? You have your book there.
There's a ton of content. There's, you know, thousands of blog articles. There's video. There's examples, illustrations of success factors, compelling marketing statement, places for additional research. There is a wealth of content. And if particularly you look under the Hiring Manager tab and then the free resources section.
Okay, and you can go to impacthiringsolutions.com to find that information. And I would recommend getting the book, You're Not the Person I Hired. So you can get it through the site for downloading, or you can buy it on Amazon, Barry, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, perfect. So I'm going to turn the recording feature off now, and then we're going to open the line, so please stand by, and we'll be right back. And again, thank you, everybody, for attending our program. We'll be right back in just a second.